pretty scary, huh? Yes, I had found myself in many scary and dangerous situations in my career, but this one may have been the very worst. Just think about it. I was locked up in a sealed runaway pickup, which was heading for the bottomless waters of Wolf Creek. And the only guy who could save me was buried under 20 bales of alfalfa hay. I'm not sure you'll want to go on listening. This could get bad. It could get so bad and so scary, it might stunt your growth or, I don't know, cause you to break out in warts or something. Use your own judgment. If you don't think you can handle it, just put the tape away and find something else to do. Never mind that you'll be turning your back on a friend and leaving me all alone in my moment of greatest need. Maybe you can find another friend. If you do, I hope you'll treat him better than you've treated me, and that you'll stand by him through thick and thicker. Or maybe you'll keep on listening and we'll ride this thing down together, friends to the bitter end. That would be the only decent thing to do, and it's the sort of thing you'd expect a real friend to do. But as I say, you'll have to make up your own mind. Don't let anything I've said influence your decision. It's a free country, and you're old enough now to start making decisions for yourself. If you want to be a scrounge, a quitter, a backstabber, and a total bum, I guess you can leave. But I don't have that option. I have to get back to the story. Are you with me or not? Okay, let's get on with it. Things looked bad, real bad. You want to know how bad they were? Through the windshield, I could see two big black birds circling above me. Would you care to guess what kind of birds they were? Not crows, not starlings or blackbirds or swallows. No, sir. They were buzzards. And you might recall that ancient piece of cowdog wisdom which states, when buzzards show up, fellers, it's usually a bad omen. Omen, whatever. It's a bad sign. And there they were, circling overhead, and I even recognized them. Wallace and Junior. Those guys had followed me around for years, hoping that someday I might fit into their dinner plans. And here they were again. And this time, they just might get their wishbone. They wheeled around in the air for a while. Then one of them, Wallace, it turned out, came swooping down, buzzed the pickup, so to speak. A buzzard buzzing the pickup. Get it? And came within inches of hitting it. He came so close, in fact, that he clipped the radio antenna and broke it off. No kidding. Well, it wasn't actually an antenna, not the kind you buy in the store. Slim had busted off the real antenna about 6 months before. He'd run into a tree limb or something, and that had left him with a stub and no radio reception. So he'd rigged up his own. Would you like to guess what it was? A metal coat hanger fastened to the stub with baling wire. It was a typical Slim fix-up deal. Ugly, tasteless, and tacky. But you know what? It worked. But that was before it got clipped off by a swooping buzzard. Anyways, Wallace swooped past the windshield and clipped the antenna, and as he passed, I saw that he had a wild, joyful expression on his ugly, beaked face. And I heard him yell, "Hi, puppy dog! Me and Junior will be standing by for rescue work! Adios!" And then he swooped away. Swooped. Swooping. Swooping. Do I care? Well, seeing hungry buzzards in the sky didn't give me a great feeling of confidence about this deal, but it did make me wonder how those guys always managed to show up in the darkest of moments. I don't have much good to say about buzzards, but you've got to admit that they're geniuses when it comes to smelling disaster.
Don't.
And it appeared that I had one in progress. I was sealed in a Ford F-250 casket and was chugging towards the creek. There was no escape, no hope, no solution. What did I do? I did what any normal, healthy cow dog would do. I began chewing on the steering wheel. At first glance, you might think that was a dopey thing to do. How could it help? Well, I'm not sure. All I can tell you is that amongst us dogs, it's a normal and healthy response. When scared beyond recognition, we start chewing on the first object we encounter. In my case, it happened to be the steering wheel. I don't think there's anything special or magic about steering wheels. When they're handy, we chew them, that's all. And I can testify that it made me feel better. It sort of took my mind off my problems as we chugged towards the creek. I knew Slim would understand. After they sent down the divers to find the pickup, after they hooked the winch line onto the back bumper and hauled it out on dry land, he would open the door and find my lifeless carcass. And there beside me would be the chewed-up steering wheel. And through his tears of grief, he would say, "Well, I reckon it brought a little aid and comfort to my pal Hank in his last hour. So it went to a worthy cause." Pretty sad, huh? But I'll tell you something about steering wheels. They're hard to chew, and they don't taste so great. If I'd had it all to do over again, I might have chewed something softer, such as the seats. Well, we've put this off as long as we can. Sooner or later, we've got to come to the bad part, when the pickup finally goes over the bank and into the creek. Are you ready? I guess I'm ready. Thanks for sticking with me. Thanks for all the memories. Thanks for helping me chew the steering wheel. I held my head at a proud angle, and like a ship's captain about to go down with the ship, who would have thought that this particular stretch of Wolf Creek was only about 6 inches deep? Not me. Heck, I supposed it was, 50, 60 feet deep at least. It looked deep. Okay, maybe it didn't look all that deep. But who notices such tiny details when he's sitting in the cab of a runaway pickup and chewing the steering wheel? Not me. And I'll guarantee you the drover wouldn't have noticed. Why, if he'd been in there with me, he'd have... I don't know what he'd have done, but it would have been loud and weird. Okay, let's wrap this thing up. The pickup chugged up to the creek bank and went plunging over the brink of the edge. You probably thought it would be a sheer drop-off of 30 or 40 feet. But it was more on the order of, 2 or 3 feet. But it was a sheer drop, and it did rattle my teeth. I had a hard bite on the steering wheel, don't you see? Once in the creek bed, the pickup continued chugging forward out into the water, which you thought was bottomless, but which turned out to be only 6 inches deep. Or maybe 4. It was deep enough so that I saw 3 minnows and a water spider swimming along. Pretty shallow, actually. And the pickup moved across the creek until it came to a willow tree, and there it quit moving. And then the motor died. An eerie silence moved into the cab. I glanced around and realized that I was alive and in one piece. What amazing good luck! By George, I had ridden that speeding runaway pickup right up to death's doorknob and had lived to tell the story. The steering wheel showed some signs of heavy use, shall we say, and that might take some explaining. Or if I was lucky, maybe Slim wouldn't notice. Or through wags and sad looks, I might be able to convince him that, termites had done it. Anything could chew up a steering wheel, not just dogs. And sometimes they fall apart. No kidding. Happens all the time. Speaking of Slim, at that very moment, he came running up. I guess he'd worked his way out from under that pile of hay and had come streaking after the pickup to save, me, you might say, his loyal dog. He was huffing and puffing, and his face was bright red from all the exertion. See, Slim wasn't exactly an Olympic champion when it came to running. His usual mode of moving was a slow slouch. Anyways, he ripped open the door, and his whole face brightened with relief. I could see it in his eyes, in his smile, everything. The guy was so glad and happy. I found it a little embarrassing, to tell you the truth. And then he spoke. "Thank you, boy. We sure come through this deal smelling like a rose. I was scared my spit can might have turned over on the dash." "Huh? Spit can?" I followed his gaze to the tuna fish can on the dash. Sure enough, it hadn't turned over. But what was the big deal? "Hey, I had just..." I don't know what a dog has to do around here to... Phooey, skip it. I knew that deep in his heart, Slim was very glad to find me alive and unharmed, and I was pretty happy about that myself. I went to wild, joyful wags on the tail section and threw myself into his awaiting arms and began licking him on the face and ears. He laughed and patted me on the back. "Were you scared, Pooch? I'll bet you were. That was a pretty scary deal. You know, all these years I've been feeding hay by myself, I've wondered what might happen if a guy fell off the load. I reckon we found out, didn't we? And you can stop licking me any time now. Quit." He pushed me away. It was then that his eyes fell upon... well, upon the chips and sawdust, you might say, and the various parts of the steering wheel. There was a long moment of silence. Then, "Good honk. What happened to my steering wheel?" "Well, I... in my hour of greatest need... in the terror of the moment, don't you see, I had felt this need to... Dogs often did odd and peculiar things when... All at once I was overcome by the feeling that I was trying to explain something that couldn't be explained. I lowered my head, tucked my tail between my legs, and moved as far away from him as I could, which placed me over against the door handle on the right side of the cab. There I beamed him several different expressions, which included awkward grins, funeral home eyes, and another one which attempted to say, "I know nothing about this, no kidding. It wasn't me. Maybe you have termites." Then our eyes met. In the great gulf of silence that loomed between us, I waited to hear his next words. His next words came as a shock to me. I had expected that he might call me a few names or throw a hissy fit. That's not what happened. Here's what happened. His face collapsed into a scowl, and he had just opened his mouth as if to deliver me a lecture on why dogs shouldn't chew steering wheels, when suddenly his eyes moved from me to a... What was that? It appeared to be a spot on the seat, a rather large wet spot on the driver's side, about where he usually sat, you might say. Slim, that is, where he usually sat on the seat. Oops. His face turned red. His eyes widened, then narrowed into angry squints. His nostrils flared. His eyes came at me like bullets. "What's that?" I had no idea. Honest. No kidding. This was the first I'd seen of it. Okay, I had some idea. It was a wet spot. A spot of wetness. Rain. It had rained and the window had been... Wait, the window had been rolled up, right? So maybe the roof had leaked. Yes, that was it. A leaky roof. Yikes, his face was getting redder by the second. This was looking bad, very bad. I glanced around, hoping to find a trap door or secret passageway that might let me out of there. No luck. At that point, I began to consider the pros and cons of hurling myself through the window. But no, I had already tried that deal.
No.
Once again, I was trapped, and his eyes were burning holes in me. I couldn't look at him. I mean, I knew nothing, almost nothing about the wet spot on the seat, but still, I felt terrible about it, and, well, the evidence did look pretty bad. He was mad, really steamed. I counted my heartbeats and waited for the storm to hit. At last, he spoke.
Hank, have you ever been beat to death with a ball-peen hammer?
No, never.
Has anybody ever tied you up in a gunny sack and throwed you into a pit full of alligators?
Not that I could recall, no.
Well, somebody should have done it a long time ago, and the only reason they didn't was they didn't want to waste a good gunny sack.
He kicked the side of the pickup.
You're worthless. Dumb as a box of rocks.
He kicked the pickup again.
First you chewed up my steering wheel, and then you puddled all over my seat. Didn't you?
But you see... Okay, yes, I done it. I was a rat and a bum, and he might as well fetch the hammer and get on with the ugly business. He stared at me through his glasses, which, by the way, were speckled with green bits of alfalfa hay. He glared at me and shook his head and muttered words under his breath. How was I supposed to respond to that? When they don't come right out and say what's on their minds, how can a dog... I mean, communication is impossible without communication, right? When they just stand there, moving their lips and muttering under their breath... At last, he broke the awful silence.
Hank, you're so dumb it hurts. But you know what hurts even worse?
No, I had no idea, and I wasn't sure I wanted to know. He leaned into the cab and brought his face right up to mine.
What hurts even worse is that I may be even dumber than you are, since I'm the doofus that caused it all.
I stared at him in disbelief, and even dared to tap the end of my tail.
If I'd tied down the dadgum hay with ropes like you're supposed to, none of this would have happened.
Yes, I had tried to warn him about that.
And if a man ain't smarter than his dog, I guess he gets what he deserves. A chewed up steering wheel, a seat that's been potted on, and a pickup sitting in the middle of the dadgum creek.
He leaned against the side of the pickup, snatched his hat off his head, and used it to fan his face.
Boy, this day ain't going according to plan.
He heaved a sigh and looked down at his feet.
Well, here I am, standing in the creek, and I notice that my boots leak. Is there anything else we can do to foul up the day? Yes, there is. We could be stuck, and then I could have the pleasure of walking back to headquarters in wet boots and explaining to the boss how I happened to park his pickup in the creek.
He climbed into the cab and slammed the door. Perhaps he had already forgotten about the wet spot on the seat, and I sure wasn't going to bring it up.
Well, I reckon we'd better find out if we're stuck or not.
He fired up the motor, stomped on the gas, threw her into reverse, and popped the clutch. We lurched backwards a few feet, and yes, I did go sailing into the dashboard. Slim got a chuckle out of that and said,
"Hang on, Pooch, 'cause Barney Oilfield is at the controls."
He shifted into Grandma Lowe, popped the clutch, and threw me back into the seat. He repeated this several times, back and forth, until at last he plowed his way up the west bank and back on dry land. I had never met Barney Oilfield, but he must have been a crazy driver. But the important thing was that we had rescued the pickup, and that left Slim in a much better mood. He grinned down at me.
"You know, Hank, you're so graceful, maybe we ought to send you to ballet school.
Ballet school? What did that mean?
I didn't know if this was a sincere compliment or just another of his cowboy jokes. With these guys, you never know. But his smile soon faded, and he snapped his finger.
Dern, I've got to load all them bales back on the flatbed.
We pulled around to the pile of bales, and with much grunting and muttering, he reloaded the hay. I supervised the loading process and checked for mice beneath the bales. No mice. And he did a pretty fair job of stacking. That done, we went on with our feed run and pitched out hay to the cows on down the creek. At 12 o'clock, we found ourselves in the East Creek pasture, far from home and food. But Slim had come prepared. He drove under a big cottonwood tree, shut off the motor, and reached into the glove box. He pulled out a brown paper sack, which, had a pretty interesting smell about it. He must have noticed that I had noticed.
Hey, you didn't know you was in here in the cab with my dinner, did you? Hey, it's a good thing you didn't. Old Slim will overlook a few fang marks on the steering wheel, but don't be messing with his dinner.
Well, no, of course. I knew that. And if he thought, it did smell pretty yummy. And yes, it was a good thing I hadn't known that it was in there. It appeared to be a sandwich. He had wrapped it in, was that newspaper? Yes, by George, he had wrapped his sandwich in a piece of newspaper. He removed the newspaper, held the sandwich in his hands, and admired it. He smelled it and cut his eyes towards me. He might have noticed that I was, watching. Watching with considerable interest. My ears leaped up and I licked my chops. Yes, I'm sure he noticed because he gave me a big grin.
Now, ain't this a beautiful sandwich? Built it myself. Canned mackerel and taco sauce. It's my own receipt.
He took a big bite. Red juice oozed out of the sides. Taco sauce, I guess it was, and dripped onto his fingers and jeans. He licked his fingers and then waved the sandwich under my nose.
Here, I reckon I can spare you a smell.
You probably think that I tried to steal a bite of it, but I didn't. No, if he'd wanted me to join him for lunch, he would have brought me something. I was sorry he didn't consider our friendship worth a sandwich or some token reward, but apparently he didn't, and that was fine. It smelled pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. I'd never been wild about the smell or taste of canned mackerel. At certain times of certain days, I'd even gone on record as saying that mackerel stinks. But on this particular day, as we were picnicking under the cottonwoods, it didn't smell half bad. Pretty good, actually. And the longer I sat there watching him eat and listening to him slurp and smack, the better it smelled. I might have preferred roast beef or fried steak, but those items weren't on the menu. He waved it under my nose again. Why was he doing this? I mean, it's not polite to eat in front of your friends, right? Even dogs know that. Yet here he was, eating in front of me.
In the garden, you're right out. You start getting ready, Bonnie. Over here, Nick. Over here, you know what?
Herbler.
I'm going to delivery. Well, yes, but sure, Slim. But you're making me go off, but do you want to throw it in the middle? I don't know. You can help yourself from yourself.
And at Islands and, food. I was pretty sure that he would offer me a bite. That would be the polite and mannerly thing to do. And to encourage his manners and politeness, I swept the pickup seat with broad wags of my tail and showed him through perked ears and facial expressions that I was ready for my portion. I waited. He took another bite. He gave me a wink. What was the deal?
Surely he wasn't going to eat it down to a stub and give me the crust. I mean, he'd done that before. Did he think I had special fondness for crusts of bread?
Hey, if he didn't want...
Well, I thought it was a mackerel sandwich. I wanted some mackerel. At that very moment, he saw something out of the corner of his eye. He turned his head to the left and said, "I'll be darned. There's that same roadrunner I seen over here just the other..."
Well, what did he expect me to do? Just sit there like a box of rocks? His term. Whilst he slobbered and smacked and showed terrible manners and devoured our whole mackerel sandwich? Heck no. I did what any normal, healthy American dog would have done. He wasn't real happy about it. Gave me an elbow in the ribs, but that was too bad. He was the guy who'd brought up the subject by waving the sandwich under my nose. I felt no guilt about it, none. What I felt was quite a bit worse than guilt. That stinking mackerel gave me the worst heartburn I'd experienced in my entire career. I burped dead fish all afternoon. Who would put such rot into a sandwich? I should have known better than to eat anything made by a bachelor cowboy. I hate mackerel. We got back to headquarters around 4 o'clock that afternoon. By that time, I had gone through the worst of the toxic mackerel syndrome and had managed to survive. Do you think I got any sympathy from Slim? Oh, no. Every time my stomach chugged, filling the cab with the smell of his awful sandwich, he had to make a big deal out of it. He even had the gall to say, you won't believe this, he even had the nerve to say, "Well, it serves you right for stealing food from your pal." In the first place, I hadn't stolen anything. I had merely claimed my rightful share of the sandwich he'd waved in front of my nose. In the second place, what kind of pal gives his dog poisoned mackerel? Oh, well. Remember that bull that had torn down the stack lot fence? Well, guess who was back in the stack lot when we returned to headquarters? Mr. Bull. It had probably taken him all of 5 seconds to rub down the fence, and we found him eating the southwest corner out of the haystack. This was bad news. See, once a bull has developed a taste for free choice alfalfa hay, he tends to want more of it, not less. Bulls are so big and powerful, they go pretty muchly where they want to go. It'll take them a little longer to trash a good fence than a bad one, but bulls have nothing better to do, and they will rub and push on a fence until they have it on the ground. It was getting along towards evening. Slim and I were tired from a long day's work, and neither of us had the time or energy to fix fence or play chase games with that greedy bull. We ran him out of the stack lot again, and once again, Slim patched up the fence. I watched and tried not to reveal my true thoughts. I mean, it was obvious, wasn't it? As soon as we left for the night, the bull would return, tear down the fence, and go back to eating a hole in the haystack. So what was the point of patching the fence again? It was wasted effort. Until Slim came up with a radical new plan, such as loading the bull in a trailer and hauling him to the other side of the ranch, this was an exercise in fertility. But no one asked my opinion. I was merely head of ranch security, and we've already discussed that tender subject. I merely observed and kept silent and tried to remember that Slim never learned anything the easy way. His motto for ranch work was, "There's 5 wrong ways of doing every job, and a guy ought to try every one of them. Every time." Okay, maybe that wasn't really his motto, but it sure described what I had seen over the years. No, until he came up with some radical new... Huh? He had the rope tied into my collar before I knew what was happening. I mean, I was just sitting there, lost in deep thoughts about improved ranch management, and I'd hardly noticed that he'd slipped down to the machine shed and returned with 12 feet of cotton rope. And before I had time to smell a rat and run for cover, he had tied one end of the rope to my collar. No doubt my face showed shock and surprise. I gazed up at him with hurt-filled eyes, whapped my tail on the ground, and asked, "What does this mean? You've tied a rope to my collar, and surely you're not planning..." He gave me a wink and a grin. "I've got it figured, Hanky. It's time for some radical action." "What?" Hey, if he thought he was going to stake me out and make bull bait out of me, he was badly... I had plans, a schedule to keep, a ranch to run. I was a very busy dog and... "No, thanks." I pointed myself to the west, hit full flames on all engines, and... That dinky cotton rope proved to be stouter than you might have supposed, and I found myself lying on my back, looking up at my former friend. "Hi, puppy. I've got a little job for you." "Huh, forget that. Not me, brother." "It'll be fun." "Oh, sure, right. No thanks." "Here's the deal. Me and you are gonna make camp in the stack lot tonight." "Oh, both of us?" "Well, maybe that wouldn't be... I mean, if he was gonna stay, it might be okay. Even fun." "We're gonna make camp, just me and you. 'Cause we're such wonderful pals and camping buddies." Yes, we had a pretty good relationship. A cowboy and his dog. "And once we've made camp, I'm going home to my nice soft bed, and you're gonna be our official ranch representative when the bull comes back." "What?" I stared at him. I could hardly believe my ears. Oh, cruel world! Oh, broken trust and wounded pride! What a fool I've been. I should have eaten his whole sandwich when I had the chance. Instead of making a little stain on his pickup seat, I should have opened up the main valve and flooded the place. Okay, fine. It appeared that I had no choice in this matter. If he was enough of a rat to make bull bait out of his loyal friend, I would stiffen my back and hold my head high and do my duty for the ranch. My conscience was clear in this matter. His conscience, on the other hand, would torment him all night, all day tomorrow, next week, next month, and for the rest of his life. One day in the distant future, fate would bring us back together. I would still be holding my head high, but he would be... I didn't know what. He would be a beggar, a tramp, a ragamuffin, a broken heap of a man who had tried to forget that awful night in March, April, May, whenever it was that he had staked out his friend on a stake and left him to fight off the assault of a herd of bellowing bulls. Okay, one bull, but he was a big bull. What a cheap trick. I should have known he'd come up with some lousy job, but I'd been a fool, a trusting fool. I'll say no more about it. Yes, I will. I want this entered into the record. Notice that his solution to the bull problem didn't involve any post-hole digging. That tells you all you need to know about Slim. With that, I shall rest my case. We marched over to the patched fence. I marched with my head high and a look of steely resolve in my eyes. A proud member of the elite ranch security forces. He, on the other hand, slumped along because he was already struggling under the terrible weight of his guilty conscience. Life would be hard for him after this. I almost felt sorry for him. No, I didn't. I felt sorry for me. Surely he wouldn't actually go through with this. Surely he'd change his mind and... He tied the other end of the rope to a corner post. He bent down and patted me on the head, as though that was some big deal, and would make up for sticking me on a lousy guard job. Well, here's our camp. Pretty nice place, ain't it? I glared daggers at him. And I want you to know, Hanky, that I sure appreciate you volunteering for this job. What a joke. And it just breaks my heart that you get to camp out tonight, and I have to go home to a nice soft bed. Right, with dirty sheets. He rubbed his chin and looked off to the west. The way I figure it, he'll come back in the night for some more of that hay. All you have to do is give him a bark or two. I'm betting he'll take off running and won't come back. Sure. And if he did happen to come back? But if he does, just, you know, beat him up. Bite off his ears. You're the cow dog around here, and I'll bet you'll think of something. I was thinking of a lot of somethings, and some of them involved Slim. Well, pleasant dreams, Pooch. I'll check you in the morning. And I sure hope there ain't a bull in here. I'd be real disappointed. And with that veiled threat, he left and walked back to the pickup. Well, he had sure done me dirt on this harebrained scheme, but there was one bright cloud on the silver lining. As he walked away, I was proud to note that he had a water stain on the seat of his britches. Tee-hee. And he was scratching his behind. Served him right. I listened to the whine of his pickup motor fade into the distance. A deep silence moved in around me, and also darkness. The sun was going down, don't you see? And when the sun goes down, it gets, well, dark, of course. And if I ever wanted to poison an enemy, I would feed him one of Slim's mackerel sandwiches. Well, I did a scan of the horizon and saw no bulls. So far, so good. Maybe he wouldn't come tonight. Maybe he had gotten bored with tearing down fences and would go do something constructive. A guy could always hope. But in the meantime, I needed to grab some sleep and revive my precious bodily fluids. Would I be able to sleep in this lonely outpost, knowing that somewhere out in the honk, snark, merging darkness there lurked a sassafras pork chop? In other words, yes, I was able to sleep. In security work, we are forced to grab sleep when it's up for grabs, which often comes in short naps. I did manage to grab a short nap, but suddenly, my ears flew up. I raised my head to an upright position and checked data control. A warning light was blinking on the Iratory scanner's circuit. I hit three switches and threw all circuits over to manual. We were picking up strange, unidentified noises. It appeared that my long night had just begun. Pretty spooky, huh? Me, all alone and tied up in the stack lot, and hearing strange, unidentified sounds in the growing darkness. You bet it was. But what made it even spookier was that those strange sounds were not made by a bull. I had no idea what they were. Shall I try to describe them? Okay, they weren't the deep bellowing of a bull, but rather, well, high-pitched squeaks. If a guy tried to attach a word to the sound, he might describe it as mew. Very strange. I couldn't imagine what the source might be, although I was pretty sure that the mews were coming from something. But what? Big mice? Rats? Some new variety of night bird that I hadn't observed or cataloged or put into our database of night birds? It was a puzzle. I homed in on the sounds and twisted my head to get better reception on the Iritori scanner network. But still, I froze. Something was crawling through the weeds between me and the haystack. How did I know? Simple. I could hear the swish and crackle of something moving, and I could also see the tops of the weeds quivering. A lot of dogs would have missed that last clue, the quivering weed tops, but I caught it. And all at once, it occurred to me that the whatever that was slithering through the weeds might be a snake. Or even worse, several snakes.